Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Yeah. We're going to open the lines now, 504-260-1870, because John Alzheimer is on with us, credit expert, formerly of FICO and Equifax. A lot of things with credit are counterintuitive. What you think would hurt your credit score may actually help it. What you think helps it may hurt it. If you've got any questions about your credit score, about your credit rating, about bankruptcy, about getting a bad credit mark or off of your score and checking your credit rating, all that stuff, James is your guy, and he's nice enough to spend an hour. And as always, people wait until the last second to text in and they don't get their questions in, so don't let that happen to you. You can text us at 504-260-1870. And I'll pass them along. Good morning, John Alzheimer. How are you?
I'm good, Tommy. How are you doing?
I am great, sir. Tell the people a little bit about yourself. Or we have some new audience that occasionally people tune in. If they don't know who you are, tell them why you're qualified to talk about what it is you're talking about.
Well, this is the fastest hour in radio. I think we always call it that, right?
It is the fastest hour in radio.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working in the credit environment longer than most of your listeners have been alive, so since 1991. And I actually worked for Equifax, which is one of the credit bureaus. I worked at FICO, which is the company that essentially invented the credit scoring process and models that are used in the U.S. credit market. And I've been an expert witness, and the last time I counted, it was like 610 lawsuits involving consumer credit. I've written 4 books on the topic, and if you Google my name, you'll find thousands and thousands of different quotes and articles that I've written over the past 30 years.
You know, as you say that, it makes me wonder, what do people normally sue about, James?
Yeah,
John, normally, I'm sorry, James, what the hell am I talking about? John Alzheimer.
That's all right. You can call me James.
No,
we're
good.
If you want to.
Call me Fred if you like. This is the fastest hour in radio. We don't have time to keep track of names, do we, John?
That's right. John is on with Charlie Tucker for the next
hour.
There
you go.
A garden variety credit-related lawsuit looks like this, Tommy. So consumer checks their credit report. Consumer sees something on their credit report that they disagree with. Consumer files a dispute with the credit bureaus, and the credit bureaus confirm that it's accurate. But it either is not accurate or the consumer is hell-bent that it is inaccurate, and they kind of bang their head up against the wall. I can't get the item corrected if it is, in fact, incorrect. And they can either live with it, or they can continue to dispute it and spin their tires in some cases, or they can take advantage of the U.S. court systems, and they can file a lawsuit against not only credit bureaus, but the company that furnished the information to them and then ended up verifying its accuracy. That is a garden variety Fair Credit Reporting Act lawsuit.
All right, let's get to the questions here. 504-260-1870. Do judgments ever expire from being sued by a credit card company?
Yeah, so a couple things about judgments. Civil judgments used to be on consumer credit reports, and I know that's not the question, but I think it's important to point that out. Civil judgments are no longer on credit reports and actually have not been on credit reports for several years. It doesn't mean that they don't exist. It just means that they are no longer on credit reports. So judgments are an interesting animal. If you've been sued by, anybody, and normally in the credit world, it's either a credit card issuer or a collection attorney is suing you to collect a debt. If you either don't respond which is generally what happens, most of the time consumers don't respond, and so they lose by default, and then the creditor now has what's referred to as a default judgment, and they can use that default judgment to attempt to collect the debt from you and forcibly collect it. One of the ways is through the income, meaning that they're going to, you know, garnish your wages and take it out of your income without your permission. They don't really even need your permission. So the amount of time that those judgments remain in place, I'm not a legal expert. I'm more of a credit guy. It's my understanding that those do eventually expire, but they don't expire for many, many years. So if you do find yourself on the wrong side of a civil judgment, it's actually probably a good idea to deal with it and work with the plaintiff, who is now the judgment creditor, to either settle it or somehow exhaust it, or they may end up taking it out of your paycheck, which, of course, you don't want them to do.
Charlie says this text, apparently picking up on your name for me, John, which is fine. I was traveling and let my credit card bills go past due. 3 late payments ended up on my credit report, dinged my score badly, and apparently I have to live with this for 7 years, in all capital letters and numbers, if you can capitalize the number. Why are they allowed to punish you for 1 late payment on 3 accounts for so long?
Yeah, so a couple of things. So in the credit reporting environment, the credit card companies and mortgage lenders and anyone else who reports information to the credit bureaus, they're actually not allowed to report you as being delinquent until you're a full 30 days delinquent. So there really is no way to report somebody as being 1 to 29 days past due on any sort of account. So what your caller just admitted to doing without realizing he was doing it is he actually just admitted that he was at least 30 days delinquent on those obligations, and that's the only way it could end up on a credit report. So the answer to the why, and it's actually kind of a cynical answer, is the reason they do it is because they're allowed to do it. And if you read the Fair Credit Reporting Act, then A, you're really, really bored. And B, you're going to end up finding language in there that indicates that the credit reporting agencies are allowed to maintain that type of information for 7 years. And so that's the answer to the why. As far as the impact, well, that's what credit scores are designed to do. They're designed to predict the likelihood of you missing payments. And the fact that you have missed payments essentially indicates to the credit scoring systems that you're willing to do those types of things. And so to the extent that you can obviously avoid that and put some time between yourself and those late payments, then your credit scores are going to start improving and recovering organically. And if you'll avoid doing it again, then you should be okay in the next few years.
I personally have a huge post-vacation, because I took 2 weeks of vacation, credit card bill due on the 19th. Am I going to gain anything, John, by paying that early, or should I pay it right on the 19th? And for people that might be a day or two late, at what point does a credit card company, I know they can hit you with the late fee, and sometimes they'll negotiate that if you're a good customer and you call them and it's a legitimate, you know, mistake or this or that. But at what point do they consider it a late payment? 30 days?
So if you're, and I'm assuming you mean the 19th of August, which means
yes,
it's due in the next 9 days.
Yes.
So here's what I always tell people. Don't pay it on the due date, because you never know what's going to happen. I cannot tell you how many times I've paid bills online and got confirmations that they were paid, mm-hmm, and they weren't actually paid. And so the system of online payments, while it's fantastic and 1,000 times better than, you know, mailing a paper check, it's not foolproof, right? Mm-hmm. So I would always suggest that you make the payment at least 2 or 3 days in advance. That way, if something does go awry, then you haven't essentially passed the due date. So now let's talk about what is late.
Wait,
what
about
is
dropping
not
a bank off at the check? Because there could be a payday involved here.
You can do that. You can absolutely do that.
And that
you
is foolproof, right?
That's exactly right. You can actually drop it off at a branch, and they are required to credit you based on the date that you dropped it off. Now, don't drop it off in the slot.
Right, the night deposit
at the bank
thing.
On a Sunday,
yeah,
because no one's there, right? So be reasonable with what you're doing. And don't expect, you know, kind of unreasonable things to pivot in your favor. As far as being late, so there's a difference in being late on an account and then being late on an account enough so that it ends up on a credit report. So if it's due on the 19th and you pay it on the 20th, you're late. And it's very likely that they're going to try to nail you with a late fee. And yes, you may be able to negotiate the late fee. and they will not be able to report you as being late to the credit bureaus because you're not a full 30 days late. Now, if you wait till the 19th of next month to make your payment, then you're a full 30 days late, and then they can report that 30-day late to the credit bureaus.
All right, we're going to take a break, pick it up here. We come back. John Elsheim is our guest, our friend, good friend, credit expert, formerly of FICO and Equifax. It's the fastest hour in radio, so get your question in, 504-260-1870. John, how long have we been doing this? You know, 10 years? How long have you been coming on?
We've been doing it for a really long time. You're one of my favorite shows to go on, so
Well, you're one of my favorite guests, John, so it works out. Thank you, John Elsheim, credit expert, formerly of FICO and Equifax. One question comes in. It's BS that you can be on time for 2 to 3 years and your credit only goes up 10 to 15 points. But if you are late on one payment over the course of 2 years to 3 years, they dock you 50 to 70 points. Is it true? I don't know. We'll find out when we come back. Tommy Tucker, John Elsheimer, answering your credit questions, 504-260-1870, when we return on WWL. Fastest hour in radio with John Elsheimer, credit expert, formerly of FICO and Equifax. He's got the cures. He's the doctor if you got credit problems. Credit rating, credit score, getting something off of your score, what can help, what can hurt. He is the man. The fastest hour in radio, so get your question in, 504-260-1870. Let me go to the next one up. The complaint, and I was just wondering about the procedure there, if that's true, that you can be on time for 2 to 3 years and your credit only goes up 10 to 15 points. But if you're late one payment over the course of 2 to 3 years, they dock you 50 to 70 points. Is that accurate?
You can be on time for decades and have credit scores above 800, which are elite level credit scores, and miss a few payments, like your previous caller who said he'd missed three payments, and see your score drop 50, maybe even more points. That's the nature of credit scores. They reward you right up until you do something. They don't have a memory. They don't remember that you were good for the past 5 years. That's not how credit scoring. So they're not human beings, right? They're models. And so they only care about what your credit report looks like today, not what it used to look like 5 years ago or even, you know, 5 months ago. So that I get it. You know, that's something that it seems kind of unfair. And if it was a, you know, human being making that determination, I think you would have a pretty good argument. But that's not what these are. These are electronic systems and models. And if you miss payments, then you are more likely to continue to miss payments. And then your score is going to be reflectively lower as a result.
It all comes down to what have you done for me lately. You can look at it almost like a football coach. You can win 5 Super Bowls, but if you lose 8 games in a row, people start worrying, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, LSU goes 6-6 this year. Next year, we're talking about the new coach. You know, that's I get it. I'm from Atlanta. I get it. Georgia goes 6-6 this year.
I don't know if
they'll lose their coach.
I don't know if they'd run Brian. They're fickle, but I don't know if they'd run Brian Kelly after a 6-6 first year. But again, who knows, John? Here we go. I have 4 credit cards with 0 balance related to credit scores. Should I close the accounts?
No. Never, ever, ever. Do not close the accounts. That's one of those things, Tommy. There's a disconnect with what makes common sense versus what makes sense in the scoring models. If you're, you know, one of the things that I hear from consumers, and I've heard this for decades. This isn't something that I've just started hearing last week, is this kind of knee-jerk reaction that if they're done using a credit card, they should immediately call the credit card issuer and close it. Look, if you want to do it, that's fine, then close it. But just be aware that you're going to lose the value of the unused credit limit in the scoring process. And credit scoring systems love to see a lot of unused credit limit on credit cards because it keeps what's called the utilization ratio. It keeps the utilization ratio of your credit cards lower. If you start closing credit cards, those ratios are going to go up. It's a mathematical certainty. So if you have credit cards that you're not using any longer, it's probably not a bad idea just to leave them open. So the next response that I always get to that, and I'm sure someone's going to call or email with this one, is, well, what about fraud? Mm-hmm. Well, I get it. So you may be concerned about someone using the card fraudulently. Well, guess what? You have no liability for credit card fraud. All, Discover, MasterCard, Amex, and Visa, the 4 credit card networks, all have 0 fraud liability policies. So every time you hear about, you know, oh, so-and-so company got breached and all this information about credit cards got exposed, There's never been a verified example of a consumer actually losing a penny in any of those scenarios because they have no liability, unless they just ignored it. But otherwise, you have no liability. So I would suggest that you leave the cards open, run them through a shredder if you're concerned about fraud, but definitely leave them open.
Somebody texted in that they're constantly barraged with credit card companies wanting to update their information and raise their credit card limit. From what you just said, does that mean they should do it? And if they get their limit raised, then their credit score goes up?
It's a great idea. That is a way for the credit card issuers to reward you for being a good customer. That's how they do it. If you're getting the opposite from them, is hey, we're going to lower your credit limit. That's their way of saying we're not happy with you as a customer. So credit card issuers will from time to time increase the credit limits of their cardholders.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And for one of two reasons. Number one, they want to incent usage. So to the extent that you have a credit limit that's too low and it's not of practical value to you, one of the ways they get around that is to increase the limit. That's number one. Number two is if you're constantly banging up against the credit limit that you're making your payments on time, mm-hmm. you're a really good customer of theirs, and they want to keep you, and that's the way to do it. So, yes, you definitely want to let them increase your credit limit. Don't spend into it. It's not a license to spend more.
No, it's not.
But it absolutely could possibly help your credit score because you're going to lower that ratio the more of the unused credit limits you have.
But let me say a word about that too, John, because I think for younger people listening, somehow when you're younger, you think, well, if this credit card company is pre-approving me for a credit card, they think that I can afford to spend this much. And that's how people get into trouble. And that's not it at all, correct?
Yeah. The reason you're getting approved for a card is because they've actually looked at your credit reports and you've passed their criteria. And so they're doing what's referred to as prospecting. And so they're sending you what's referred to as a firm offer of credit based on their viewing of your credit report and your credit score. You passed their criteria and they have to offer you something. It's in the Fair Credit Reporting Act. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to offer you a $35,000 credit limit. You've got to have an income that's commensurate with that type of credit limit. But at the very least, you're going to get something. And if you make your payments on time, then like what your previous emailer indicated, then it's very likely they're going to increase your limits over time.
So do you want to do that or not? Do you want to? I always click close because that happens to me as well. I don't feel like fooling with all that. I'm just trying to make the payment. But should I give them the new updated information and let them increase the credit limit? Would that behoove me to do that or no? Not really make a difference?
Yeah, and generally what they're asking of you is for you to update your income information, and they're required now to consider, and they have been since 2009, so it's nothing new. Mm-hmm. But if your income indicates that you have the capacity to take on more debt, they're creditors, Tommy. That's what they do for a living. So you shouldn't be surprised if they try to incent that you use the card more by increasing your credit limit. Now, if you want to kind of play a quick one on them, and you do allow them to increase your credit limit and you do not spend more than you normally do, then you've actually just kind of helped your credit situation without getting into more debt. So it almost was a win-win for everybody.
I have so much credit open now, I could buy a Honda on a credit card. And one of these days I want to do that just to see the look on the face and to get the bonus points for it. John Alzheimer's our guest. Fastest hour in radio, 504-260-1870. A quick break, then back to the phone lines. Try to get your question in, and I'll try to answer as many common questions or at least pass them along to John, and he'll try to answer them for you. Credit expert, formerly of FICO and Equifax. And before we wrap it up, we'll tell you how you can check your credit score for free, and you're entitled to do that. 936, 24 till 10. Traffic now on WWL. Tommy Tucker, WWL 941, back with John Alzheimer, credit expert, formerly of FICO and Equifax. To the phone lines we go. Kurt, New Orleans, hi, you're on WWL with John, as briefly as you can, please.
Yes, just real quick, he mentions about not closing a credit card account. Let's use this for an example. Let's say you had some bad credit issues, now you restarted, you're coming back. They offer you these credit cards with low credit limits, high interest rates, maintenance fees monthly, annual fees. Then your credit's better, but you want to get rid of those. How do you close those? Because even if you don't use them, they still charge you a monthly maintenance fee, an annual $95 a year just to have the account open. And you're not even using it, but you're just scared to close it because it's going to hurt your credit.
John?
Yep, good question. So those are clearly subprime credit cards, and those serve a purpose. One of them is to help people rebuild their credit reports and scores after some sort of credit disaster. Those do generally have very low credit limits in some scenarios, you know, maybe a few hundred bucks. And so they have really very little practical use because, I mean, you can go buy tires and max out your credit card. Here's what I would suggest you do before you close those cards, which, you know, they're not good long-term solutions, especially after your credit reports and scores have recovered to the point where you can start getting credit cards from the mainstream credit card issuers that are not nailing you with those maintenance fees and those super high interest rates. Wait till you open at least one or two of those new cards. That way, what you're doing is you're not polluting your credit report with a bunch of closed accounts prior to opening any new accounts. And so you want to wait till you open the new cards, because if you do, then A, your credit scores have recovered already, you're taking advantage of them, you're opening those cards when your credit scores are as high as they possibly can be, and you're not waiting till you've potentially lowered your score before you go out and try to open those new cards. Now, if you are closing credit cards and they have, you know, $1,000, $2,000 of credit limits, that's math that you're going to want to apply to the new cards that you open. If you open new cards and they've got credit limits $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, maybe even higher, then you can go ahead and close those other cards because you have replaced those low-limit cards with much higher-limit cards. And so net-net, the math actually works out in your favor. The only thing I would do is I would open the new cards prior to closing the old cards.
Thank you, Kurt. I appreciate the call. I hope that helped. This text comes in and says, please ask your credit expert, what happens if you're an authorized user on an account? Does it show up on their credit report? Does that show up on the authorized person or just the person who opened the account?
Yeah, so that's funny. Being an authorized user on a credit card is almost like having a credit card with training wheels. It is a very, very common way of establishing a credit report and a credit score. In fact, that's how I established credit in the 1980s. And so the strategy has been around for many, many years, and it's still a good strategy. When an authorized user is someone who is allowed to use the credit card that belongs to another person, and they have no liability for the debt, meaning that the balances on the account are really the responsibility of another person. You're just authorized to use the card. Authorized user accounts do show up on your credit reports, and they can help your credit scores. Just make sure that you associate yourself with a credit card that is old, has a high credit limit, has a low balance, and has always been paid on time. And those are all good things for your credit scores. And so, yes, so they absolutely can help your credit scores. What you don't want to do accidentally is associate yourself with a credit card that has a low credit limit, that's been paid late, that has a very large balance, because those are things that are actually working against you. So keep that in mind before you start, you know, taking the plunge and becoming an authorized user.
Along those lines, you know, I helped my kid establish credit by guaranteeing a credit card, and the kid was on my card. I didn't realize, but how would the company know that unless you give them? Because they just said, "Do you want anybody else on the card?" And I put her name down, so she was using a card. But how would they know if I didn't give them her Social Security number? How would that apply to her credit rating?
Yeah, the new standards for authorized users require more identification information be collected by the card issuer because of that very issue, Tommy. You had a very limited amount of information, and so it was hard to associate the account with the correct consumer's credit report. That problem has been solved now because the credit bureaus are requiring more information come from the card issuer so that they can associate the account with the correct consumer's credit report. So really, at this point, that problem has been solved, which is good, obviously, because you want to get credit for being an authorized user on an account that's in good standing. And again, this strategy, if you Google how to build credit, it's always one of the things that's listed in almost every single article or interview about reestablishing credit.
What I did was got a credit card because you get out of college and they get them offers. I told her to keep it to $500 a month, and I paid it every month to make sure it was going to get paid. Now she's getting ready to turn 26. She got another credit card because she's now being besieged with offers because they've been paid on time, and I explained how important it is to pay your bills on time, and I would think now she's on her way.
Yeah, I mean, look, the credit industry is, or the credit reporting industry, it's a self-policing industry. If you do it right, you're going to earn, if you do it right, it's really hard not to have great credit scores. And you're going to get competitive offers from banks. You're going to get, you know, banks throwing money at you. And before the interest rates and mortgages flew through the roof, it was, you know, sub 3% for mortgages, 0% balance transfer offers for credit cards, 0% auto loans for, you know, for certain makes and models. I mean, that's historically low. Even today with mortgage interest rates about twice what they were at the end of last year, you know, it's still a pretty competitive interest rate in, you know, compared to like the history, if you will, of mortgages. And so these are the things that you get to enjoy when you have good credit. And unless you're independently wealthy and writing gigantic checks for all these things, you're going to have to utilize the credit reporting and the credit scoring system. So you might as well do it right, because doing it wrong, to, you know, to kind of use one of your prior callers, it's a 7-year penalty.
I'm
if
sure
you do things wrong, like missing payments and defaulting and having collections.
I'm sure
the credit reporting system has a very long memory.
I'm sure you get the envelopes as well. There's a lot of money in your house. It's like, yeah, just leave it right where it is. Text comes in, tried to get a mortgage and was told my FICO score was only 572. I checked all three credit scores and I'm between 650 and 660. Where did they get that score? That's a great question for you, John.
Yeah, so in the mortgage environment, it's a little bit of a – so this could take about 30 minutes to answer, and I know we don't have 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you have a boatload of FICO scores. Think about walking down the cereal aisle at the grocery store. There are tons of options, but they're all called cereal. It's the same thing with FICO scores. You have tons of different FICO scores. You don't have just a single score. The scores that are used in the mortgage environment because of the FHFA are about 20 years old. They're older than the scores used in every single other industry because of FHFA. Those scores are not as, I don't want to say predictive, because they're definitely predictive, but they don't count things the way that the newer, more contemporary credit scoring systems count things. And things like medical collections and inquiries can be more problematic for those older scores than the newer scores. So, whoever that caller or texter was can thank the FHFA for the experience that he's going through, because if he went to try to buy an auto or try to open a credit card, he wouldn't be running into this issue.
Thomas, New Orleans East, quickly, hi, you're on WWL with John Oldsheimer. Thomas.
I've had three cards canceled for lack of use. It's not that my credit was bad. It's just that they canceled them because I didn't use them. So how does that affect my credit?
And what does he do now?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I actually almost ran into the same thing with a credit card about 2 months ago. Credit card issuers don't make any money if you don't use the credit card, right? So you need to use it, or they're going to reassign that credit limit to a different consumer who may use it more frequently than you do. So, yes, credit card issuers absolutely can cancel credit card accounts for non-use. They used to be able to charge inactivity fees, but they can't charge those anymore. So now that it's either lower your credit limit or close your account. So an account that's closed by the creditor has the same effect as an account that's closed by the consumer. If you're going to lose the value of that credit limit in your credit score, and it can lead to a lower score. So that's why this is the advice I always give people. Put your credit cards on a revolving door strategy. Don't let any of them collect dust for too long, or the card issuer may close it out from underneath you or lower the credit limit. Use them periodically. I'm not saying use them a lot. Go pay for gas for your car. Go pick up your dry cleaning. Pay for your groceries 1 month with a certain credit card. And then you reset the clock of activity, and it acts as an incentive for the card issuers to leave them open and not close them out from underneath you.
What I found works well for that is streaming services. If you have subscriptions to Wall Street Journal or whatever, or streaming services, if you spread those out between credit cards as a charge every month, and it's very minor, and that's the way to kind of get it done. Before we run out of time, John, first of all, is that a good idea, you think?
It's a fantastic strategy. It's absolutely fantastic. You put it on autopilot.
Yep.
It's a tiny amount of money, so yep. It's not like it's killing you every single month. And if you ever want to change your mind, then you can. And the credit card issuer is happy because they make a little bit of that swipe fee income every single month, which actually comes from your streaming service. It doesn't come from you.
So go ahead. Use that idea. Let's quickly talk about checking your credit score if you can. John, how do you go about it? Who gets it for free? What does it mean, the difference between credit rating and score? You had about 2 minutes, so take your time.
Yeah, so whenever you hear someone talk about your credit rating, you're not listening to someone who knows what they're talking about. A credit rating, and I hope you don't do that, Tommy.
I don't.
A credit rating is assigned to a company. It's something that is assigned by Standard & Poor's and Moody's. It's essentially the credit risk of a company, not the credit risk of a consumer. The credit risk of a consumer is expressed in a credit score, not a credit rating. So whenever you hear of things like FICO and Vantage Score, those are the credit scores that are assigned to consumers based on the information on our credit reports. So let's make sure that if you're listening to someone and they're starting using language that doesn't apply to the industry, you know, just with a grain of salt, you can check your credit reports, which are not your credit scores, but your credit reports, for free every week through a website called annualcreditreport.com. That is a legitimate website. They're not going to try to sell you something. That is a website that was set up pursuant to federal law. The credit reporting agencies have to host that website. And they have, since COVID actually, have been giving away free credit reports weekly from all three credit bureaus to consumers who want them and who choose to claim them. And that is good through the end of this year. So we don't know what the bureaus are going to do next year with respect to the frequency of the freebies. As far as credit scores go, depending on with whom you have your business relationship, so Amex, Discover, Chase, a lot of the big lenders actually will give you a credit score on a monthly basis, and it's the credit score that they already purchase for ongoing account maintenance. And through an arrangement they have with FICO actually allows them the secondary use of actually giving it to their cardholders and their borrowers. So if you have a relationship with any large creditor, it's very likely that they're participating in this FICO program where you can get your score for free on a monthly basis simply because you have this relationship with that particular lender. So my point is, Tommy, is that you shouldn't be buying things like credit reports and buying things like credit scores because there's so many free options out there that you don't have to pay for them.
I hope we helped a lot of people. John, we're out of time. That's why we call it
The fastest hour in radio.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you again soon. John Alzheimer, credit expert, formerly of FICO and Equifax. Quick break. By the way, you can hear all of this. It'll be posted as a podcast in a little bit if you want to go back and listen to anything that John had to say. Quick break. Then we find out what Noel Norman's got planned for us today here on WWL.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.